Hey, you guys, time once again for Flickers of Fear. This movie that we're talking about today is one that I've actually been wanting to revisit for a really long time. I think I even put it in a few of our Patreon polls, like to do the movie retrospective on that me and Tom would do, because I remember seeing it a long time ago and it making something of an impression, but I hadn't seen it since then. I probably only saw it one time, but I had been wanting to see it again ever since I was scrolling through Tubi like a few months ago and saw that it was available on there for free. And it's interesting because I kind of feel like this is generally billed as a black comedy, which I guess it kind of is. And I think that I always had that impression of it, that it was kind of like a dark comedy. And a lot of that may be attributable to the cover art, which makes it look like very funny and like very satirical. So I guess I had forgotten that this movie, while technically I guess it is a black comedy, it's not exactly like what you might be imagining. It's actually more a straight horror movie and more like a surreal kind of experience. So actually, I was really happy that I watched it again because I was kind of thinking, I don't know why I remembered it like that. Like, I just remembered it was like some kind of goofy. I might have been like mixing it up with another similar type of movie from the time. I'm not really sure. But I don't know. I remembered it being like much funnier, but this one is actually funny, but the sense of humor in it is very, very dry. It's not kind of like oh, that was hilarious type of thing. It's a much more unsettling type of vibe to it. And at the toward the end of it, it goes like into pretty much a straight on horror film. So it's a really interesting sort of cultural relic, and it's another one that I feel like doesn't really get talked about all that much. I think it has kind of a small cult following, but not as big a cult following as I feel like it probably deserves, because this is a fucking weird ass movie. And I had forgotten how weird it was, so it made me like appreciate it. I'm just like, oh, that's awesome that it was like way weirder than I remembered. So this is Parents from 1989. Now, I wasn't aware of this when I first watched it, but this was directed by Bob Balaban. Now, if you don't know that name, I guess he's mostly known as an actor, and he's been in fucking everything. I think he's best known for being in like Christopher Guest films. He was in a bunch of Wes Anderson movies. He was in Midnight Cowboy, actually. He had a small part in that, which Tom and I just reviewed a couple days ago. He was in Close Encounters. He was in Altered States. He was in all kind of like, he's in everything. I said, and even like recently when I rewatched I Am the Pretty Thing That Lives in the House from, I think that's 2016 that came out, he had a small part in that as well. Actually, he's been in a bunch of movies, but he's also been in a bunch of like TV shows as well. Like he was on Seinfeld and all this other kind of stuff. So I wasn't aware, but he's also a children's book author and he's a director. Now, this is his first feature film. I believe he only did maybe three movies, and I think that the critical and audience response to this first film and the fact that it didn't make any money probably didn't really endear him to, you know, filmmaking executives or producers or whatever, but he did actually direct a really lot of TV episodes. Like he directed the pilot episode for Tales from the Dark Side. He did some episodes of Eerie Indiana, if you guys remember that show from the 90s. He did a couple, I think he did one episode of Strangers with Candy, if you guys remember that one. So the dude is just like super, super multi-talented. Like I said, even if you don't know his name, you would immediately recognize his face because he's just a very prolific character actor and also a director. So he directed this movie, and I see it gets a lot of comparisons with David Lynch, which I can see that. It's really strange because even though this came out in 1989, which was around the same time that Twin Peaks, the TV show, was also in production, I kind of feel like the vibe of this movie is very much like Twin Peaks, but it's not. But it didn't come out, like it came out or it was being made around the same time, so it's not necessarily like he was like ripping it off. Although I've seen like some comparisons to Blue Velvet as well, even though I get that. It's like a slightly different tone to that. This is more Twin Peaksy to me than Blue Velvety, but I get like how people are saying that. Watching it again yesterday, like for this review, the movie that it most reminded me of, oddly, was Society, which also came out in 1989, the Brian Yuzna film. And I kind of feel like I don't know, it's kind of different. I think Society, even though these movies, they're not a tone, they're not thematically similar, but just, I don't know, like the tone of it is very, very similar to me. This one is not as grotesque or like over the top, and it has like much more of a weird, like David Lynch meets John Waters kind of vibe to it, which you don't really see a lot of that. It's really, really hard to explain like what kind of movie this is. Like I said, I think that's why it usually just gets lumped into black comedy horror, and it is, but it's not super over the top funny. You know what I'm saying? Like the sense of humor is just like really, it's a very disquieting film, interestingly. So as I said, this came out in 1989, and basically what you have is it's set in 1958, in this kind of father knows best, you know, very, very idealized 1950s Americana. I will say too, like before I even get into it, the production design in this is amazing. I really, really love just the way the insides of the houses look, and just like it looks spot on. It looks like the 1950s, you know what I mean? It looks like you went back in time and like are hanging out in people's houses. It's just a very, very 1950s kind of vibe to the whole thing. It's really, really well done. They also use like a lot of kind of cheesy songs from the 50s, like Purple People Eater, and you know, so there's some like some kind of mambo type of music, that kind of stuff. So it has that real kind of like kitschy John Waters vibe, but then there's something like really sinister like underlying it, which I think is like really well done. So yeah, set in 1958, so there's this family, the Lemley family, which is dad, who's played by Randy Quaid, mom, who's played by Mary Beth Hurt, and Michael, their 10-year-old son, who's played by an actor. This was his only movie, I think. I don't know if this was such a bad experience or he just didn't want to be an actor or something like that. But yeah, I'm pretty sure this was the only movie that he was ever in. So they moved to California from Massachusetts. Now, right from the jump, it's the little boy, Michael, comes across. He doesn't really have a lot of lines. He's a very somber, you can tell that he's very, very troubled. Like he kind of, and he you almost get the impression that he's like afraid of something. Like he seems very awkward. He's kind of small for his age. There's all this other kind of stuff. And then, you know, there's a scene of him at school where he has to stand up because he's new, and it's like, well, tell us something that w you're a new student, so like tell us something that we don't know, like tell us some new information. And he comes up with this thing about, I guess it was something that he read in a witchcraft book or something, that if like that if you kill and skin, what was it, a black cat, and like put it in the oven and then eat the bones, like then you'll become invisible. Like he just comes up with some shit like that, and everyone's just kind of like, what? So he's a little bit of a weird kid. Now it so happens that there's another new student in the classroom with him, and it's this girl named, I think her name is Sheila, and she's a little bit older. She's like way taller because she said she got held back a year, and she's kind of intrigued by his weirdness because she's also a little bit weird because she was like, "Oh, where'd you find that stuff out about the cat?" And he's like, "Oh, I read it in the library." And then she basically tells him that she's from the moon and comes up with all this kind of stuff. Like she lived in a village on the moon where it was all Earth people and stuff. So these two weirdos are like kind of hanging out together. Now, at home, at Michael's home, you have their very, very, very fucking weird ass parents, particularly Randy Quaid playing the dad. And it's like, it's a shame because Randy Quaid, you know, very famously kind of went off the rails like in real life, like later on. So he's like basically a nutcase. But he is actually great in this. I think this is, I haven't seen, obviously, I haven't seen like his entire filmography or anything, but he is really, really great in this because he comes across as your sort of aw shucks 50s dad type of thing, but he's also really super creepy. He just has this really sinister kind of, you know, undertone going on with his performance that's really, really well done. And I think like the way that it's shot too, because sometimes there'll be these very, like I said, very David Lynchian kind of like close-ups that are just like slightly too close, and then he's kind of sweaty, and then like he'll kind of like smile like a little too wide, and it's just kind of like this really creepy kind of shit. Now, the dad, his name is Nick actually, and he works at, I love this, this is one of my favorite things about the movie, he works at this chemical plant, and it's called Toxico. And basically, he's working on making essentially Agent Orange. It's like a defoliant, and they're talking about how awesome chemicals are, and we're gonna just defoliate, we're just fly this plane over this village in the rainforest, and we're just gonna like wipe everything out, you know what I mean, like all the trees and the people and everything. And they're just like talking about how awesome this is. Toxico, for some reason, also has an in-house morgue, you know, as one does. And they even have like a door that says, you know, Department of Human Testing or whatever. So I guess they're like testing on humans, and it's not even like, no one even says anything about it. They're just like, well, that's what you do. You know what I mean? So like I said, this has a very satirical kind of edge to it, but it's not like in your face with it. It's very subtle. I mean, I don't know if I'd say it was subtle, but you know, because having a sign saying Department of Human Testing, but they don't, it's not like, ooh, look, satire, like look how funny it is. Because it's kind of like a satire of, you know, this kind of like 1950s, like I said, this father knows best, idealized, you know, this really repressed, you know, conservative type of thing that was going on in the 50s. So it is like a satire of that, but I would call it, like I said, I don't know if I'd call it necessarily subtle, but it's more like a gentle satire. They're not like making, you know, they're not like putting fucking a clown nose on it. You know what I'm saying? It's just kind of like, they don't explain necessarily why there's a bunch of cadavers in this place. And, you know, when he just kind of goes in there and cuts them up, it's like, yeah, I want some of the liver. You want me to puree that? Sure. Yeah, that'd be good. You know what I mean? It's like, cause they're going to run all these tests on it, and it's just kind of treated like it's just, that's just what they do. We're just testing on all these cadavers. So yeah, dad does that at his job. And then mom, is, you know, obviously just like in the idealized 1950s sitcoms, is a stay at home mom, and she's pretty much always like cooking. She's like super into cooking. Now at this point, like I said, at the beginning, you're not entirely sure, because you know that Michael, the kid, is having some problems, or he's like afraid of something. Now at first you think maybe it's just because he has all these nightmares. They kind of mention that, you know, that he's had nightmares before, and it's like a recurring thing. And they even show, there's a lot of really great, like creepy, cool, like surreal nightmare sequences in this that the kid has, like one of the best ones. It kind of goes along almost like this little satirical John Watersy kind of thing, and then all of a sudden he's having a nightmare where he jumps into bed and it just like turns into this big ocean of blood. So it's just like this really cool, like very disconcerting type of imagery, which I think is really well done. So he's been having nightmares, and he doesn't really want to eat what his mom is always making for dinner, which is usually big, huge, steaming plates of meat. And he's just kind of become suspicious about, where is this meat coming from? There's like a great conversation in there where, you know, since they've moved, he's like, we've eaten leftovers like every night since we moved, and it's been like a week or 10 days or whatever. And he's like, what were these before they were leftovers? And his dad just kind of looks at him and goes, leftovers to be, you know what I mean? So obviously they don't want to tell him like where all this meat is coming from. So for a long time, I mean, you know, like I said, this movie came out in 1989, and it's right there in the description of the movie. The kid basically starts to believe that his parents are cannibals. Now, one of the things that gives him this impression, and like I said, they don't go into a lot like what was going on like before they moved or anything like that. I mean, it does kind of come clear later on why they had to move, but, you know, other than the mom saying something about him having like nightmares previously and all this other stuff, it doesn't really go much into like the backstory. But there's one scene where he gets up in the middle of the night, where Michael gets up in the middle of the night, and he's going to get like a glass of water, and he sees his parents having sex, I guess, like in the like on the living room floor. But the way it's shot, you can't really tell what it is they're doing. And then like later on, they show it, like they recontextualize it so that maybe he saw something a lot more graphic or a lot grosser, like almost that, like they were eating each other, or they were covered with blood or something like that, which they don't really show at the beginning. It's kind of more like they have red smudges on their face, but it looks like lipstick maybe, and they're all kind of like sweaty, and it's this weird thing. So as the time goes on, the kid seems to become more and more convinced that the meat that they're eating is from people. You know what I mean? Is human meat. Now, it's interesting because this movie, for a long time, everything is kind of seen from the subjective point of view of the kid, which I think is really good. And I've seen one, at least one reviewer compare this movie to The Reflecting Skin, which it's a lot different than that. It's not quite as like arty But it's still arty, but it's not, it doesn't have quite the same like vibe as The Reflecting Skin, but in the sense that everything is seen subjectively from a child's point of view, so you're not entirely sure, you know, and obviously he's really troubled, so you're not really sure if he's seeing things and not understanding them and then casting them in a, you know, much like in The Reflecting Skin, where he thought this woman was a vampire just because he saw her do particular things and he didn't know enough to contextualize it. So this is kind of a similar thing, and it kind of plays with that for a while because, you know, the kid, you know, he sees a few things that you're, you know, you're seeing them as the viewer, but, you know, you're seeing them from his subjective point of view. So you're like, is he really seeing things the way that they really are? Or is he just like misunderstanding what's really going on? And plus, you know that he's troubled. You know he's been having nightmares. There's this one really great, like particularly great nightmare sequence where he's kind of in, he's hiding in the pantry, like watching his mom like cooking like through the blinds or through the slats in the door. And there's all these like big sausages like up on the top shelf, and they kind of start to come to life and sort of like come around like kind of tentacles. And he's just kind of like, the way he's looking at the side of it, it's just like really, really cool shit like that. So like I said, for a long time, you're not entirely sure if he's just being, you know, like he doesn't understand, like he thinks they're cannibals because he doesn't necessarily know what's going on. But I will say that his interactions with his dad are like super, super creepy. Like I said, Randy Quaid is like so, so good in this. He's just kind of like, just the way that he says just this creepy stuff, like he's talking about how a room is dark, and he's like, yeah, the basement's dark and this is, you know, whatever. And then he says something like, but you know what is the most dark place that you have to worry about? And then he like points to his head like, in here. You know what I mean? It's like that kind of creepy shit. And then he says like weird shit to his son, like he's cooking him eggs and like, you know, more meat, like these big kidneys or liver or whatever, and he's cooking him breakfast, and the kid's sitting there watching him, and he's like, oh, you're watching me, that's good. And he's like, you know, people are always watching you, maybe even when you're in the bathroom. It's like he's always like saying creepy shit like that. So it's like, it's really, really, it's like a really kind of restrained performance. It's like really, really unsettling. And like I said, it's kind of a shame that he kind of went Looney Tunes later on, because, you know, it's over the top comedic as some of his other roles were. Like I said, I haven't seen a ton of them, but this one was actually kind of like restrained, but also really good. And you could kind of like feel like that he was just kind of barely, you know, he was just kind of like barely keeping control over this like rage or this whatever, like psychopathy that was going on like right underneath the surface. But he was trying to like maintain this sense of normalcy and stuff. But yeah, so there's that whole thing going on. So the kid, like I said, becomes convinced that his parents are cannibals. And at school, I guess that in the class, he's supposed to draw, they're all supposed to draw like their family, like, you know, in a little workbook or whatever. And so the drawing that he does is basically like him like screaming, and then like the whole thing is covered with red crayon. And so he comes to the attention of the school's social worker, who is played by Sandy Dennis. And interestingly, in contrast to the very, very 50s buttoned up, you know, bridge playing, you know, everything is perfect, the hair is perfect, you know, all that kind of stuff. In contrast to that, Sandy Dennis's character, the social worker, is almost kind of like a proto-hippie in a way. She kind of like has all these kind of shawls, and she's kind of smoking in her office, and she's real disorganized and shit, and her hair is kind of messy and shit like that. And there's even a funny line where they call Michael, where she calls Michael into the office, and he says something to her like, you're not a real grown-up. So, you know what I mean? Because she's kind of like, kind of disheveled. Like I said, a little bit hippie-ish for like 1958. Now, she becomes concerned about these drawings, and she can't really get any information out of him. Like, he doesn't really want to tell anybody that he thinks his parents are cannibals. So he's very, like, reticent. And so the school, like, you know, the social worker is actually starts to, like, get worried about him, and, like, she kind of actually cares what's going to happen to him. But she can't get a read on him. She can't get any information out. He seems very standoffish. She seems very rude. He won't like really give her any information. So it's kind of hard for her to like determine what's going on in his life. And so as it goes on, it kind of gets to a point where she gets so worried that she basically like comes with him back to the house, because he gets to a point where, it starts escalating and escalating, and he goes down to the cellar and basically finds, or it appears that he finds, like a human leg, like hanging from a meat hook, like down in the cellar. Now, like I said, you're not entirely sure if he really sees this or not, because when the social worker goes to the house with him later, it doesn't appear to be there anymore. However, while she's there, she does actually find a corpse and she ends up getting killed. So there's like this whole kind of. So, like I said, for about three quarters of the movie, they leave it, like Bob Balaban, he leaves it kind of like ambiguous as to whether this kid is just misinterpreting like his parents' weird ass behavior. And they're not really cannibals, but in the last part of it, they make it pretty definitive that yeah, they are cannibals. Although there's still like a little bit of plausible deniability left in there, I guess a little bit. So it does have that going for it. And at that point, like at the end of it, basically it's kind of like it's revealed that the his parents actually do say to him to his face, yeah, we're cannibals. You'll get used to it. Your mother did. So that implying that. The mom didn't start out as a cannibal, but then like he kind of like the husband sort of like coerced her into it, and then she says something like, "I learned to love it," or something like that. So it's just kind of this whole creepy thing. But then it ends up that the kid like sort of stabs his dad, and then he goes to like kill the kids, and we can have another one, and then like but then like the mom kind of defends the kid in the end. But in the end, like the house kind of blows up, and they presumably both die, and he's sent to live with his grandparents. But then at the end, you're not really sure if because these are the dad's his paternal grandparents, so you're not really sure if they if. If he learned the cannibalism from them, because like the very last thing is the grandparents are like, "Oh, get in bed, little Michael," and blah blah blah, and then they bring him like for a midnight snack, they bring him this sandwich that looks like it has all the fucking meat on it, and he's just like kind of looking at it like that, and it's just kind of, but it's so this it movie is like so weird. It's just like so like visually, it's really really cool and like really really interesting. Like I said, it has kind of all these sort of Lynchian vibes to it. It has all these great like tracking shots. Particularly this one that a lot of people bring up when they review the movie that kind of goes from like all the way down in the cellar and then goes all the way up like through a floor grate and then goes up through the roof and all this other kind of stuff, which, was kind of a pain in the ass to pull off, like especially like 1989 before they had, CGI or anything like that. So, but yeah, there's all kind of like really cool. And like I said, the production design, like particularly the interior design of the house. It's just like really, really cool looking. And like some of the shots are just like gorgeous. It's like looks really cool. And he uses kind of stuff like there's slow-mo, there's black and white, there's, that kind of. So it has kind of like a surrealist, like dreamlike sort of thing to it. Like I said, it's not funny necessarily, like not in a funny ha-ha kind of way. It's kind of like a funny, disturbing, like very, very dry humor type of way. It's like really, really hard to describe if you haven't seen it. Like I said, I know I understand why people usually call it a horror comedy, but it's not like, you know what I mean? It's not like Tucker and Dale versus Evil, like which is obviously a horror comedy and it's hilarious. This one is like a lot more, the humor is a lot weirder and a lot more subtle. Like I said, it's very. It does give me like a very society type of vibe or like a Twin Peaks kind of thing. It is a very Twin Peaksy in places. Like I said, I've heard some people compare it to Blue Velvet, which Blue Velvet is a lot, more serious, more dramatic and shit like that. But this one has more of like a John Watersy type of vibe to it too, but like a dark John Waters. If I don't know, it's like it's a weird like combination. But it's just like so interesting that this movie. It's just like such a strange like relic of the time, and it's like I'm really happy that I decided to watch it again because I remembered, I think I saw it on cable probably back in like the early 90s or something, and I remembered liking it, but I remembered, oh, the kid like thinks his parents are cannibals, and that's like pretty much all I remembered about it. And I said, oh, and they really were cannibals, and that was like all I remembered about it. And I remembered it being kind of funny, but then like over the years since I hadn't seen it, and every now and then I'd see that cover and I'd be like, oh yeah, that was funny and stuff like that. But like when you watch it, I guess because, like I said, the cover makes it look like a more straight like a horror comedy, but it's not like that. It's like really kind of. it's really kind of weird and surreal. And then in the last quarter of it goes pretty much straight horror movie. Like, you know what I mean? Like after the social worker like goes to the house and gets killed and shit like that. So it pretty much goes straight horror movie at that point. But I really liked, you know, the way that everything was kept subjective, like from Michael's point of view. So for a long time, you weren't actually sure if the parents were cannibals or if they were just like fucking weirdos, and the kids didn't really understand like what they were looking at. I will say too, and you don't necessarily have to read the movie like this if you don't want to, but, and I don't know if this was intended. I mean, I'm sure it probably was, but there's totally, I mean, I caught a subtext of a thing where it's like the parents aren't necessarily cannibals, but he's kind of like making, there's like a subtext about maybe his family is abusive, because there is one interesting exchange between Michael and his little friend Sheila, and Sheila says something along the lines of, oh, you know, you think everyone else's, like your parents are weird or whatever, but it's like you think everyone else's parents are so great. You know, I know, you know, my mom is horrible, and it's like I know this other guy, like that's a friend of my dad's, and it's like he, everybody thinks he's this great guy, but then like he goes and steals cars and beats his wife and stuff like that. So I think that he's kind of making a little bit of a subtextual thing about cannibalism as sort of like a stand-in for an abusive family, whether it's physically abusive or emotionally abusive, or you could even say it was like a, you know, a parable for like alcoholism or something like that. Anything that's kind of like going on, anything dark that's going on beneath the veneer of like this perfect family, you know, that they're trying to portray to the world. So you could kind of see it that way, because I totally did read it that way, especially after that. After that one thing, because it's just kind of like, because the kid in it is so, I mean, when you first meet him, like I said, he has lines in it, but not a lot. Like most of the time, he's just kind of like standing around, like looking terrified or like looking weirded out. And but he says a lot with his eyes, you know what I mean? It's a very, it almost, it's like a weird blank expression, but you can tell from his expression that that's, and his body language, that he's just kind of like terrified, and he's not entirely sure like what his dad in particular is going to do. Like the mom doesn't come across, she still comes across as weird, but she comes across as more loving toward the kid, whereas the dad just comes across as just bizarre, like, you know what I mean? And you can tell, and it's, I don't want to say like resentment, but it's just like this really weird like vibe between the two of them, like the way he talks to him and stuff. But it's just kind of like, so that was something that really like struck a chord with me, because I said, oh, that seems like they're saying something about like the dad being like abusive or whatever, but he's using like cannibalism as kind of like a stand-in for that, I guess. But like I said, you don't have to read it like that. You could just totally read it as like a weird ass, a weird ass kind of funny surrealist movie about, you know, a kid who finds out his parents are cannibals. I've seen this compared to Eating Raoul as well, which I could see that, although I haven't seen that movie in a long time, so I'm not going to get like too much into that because I can't remember exactly what happens in it. You know, surprisingly large number of comedies made of about cannibalism. It's really interesting now that I'm thinking about it. But yeah, so I was kind of think too that when I was thinking about good kind of comedic movies made about cannibalism, I was going to say like, oh, Ravenous, that was a good one too. And I feel like that's a one that doesn't really get brought up a lot either. That's not quite as funny, but, and that's like a totally different vibe to this one, but it's a similar kind of, I don't know, it's similar kind of tone in that it's funny, but it's like a much more dry humor, which this one is too. So like I said, if you like Twin Peaks, if you like John Waters, if you liked Society, that movie from 89, about the with the shunting, if you like movies in that sort of vibe, and you're not expecting this to be like laugh out loud funny, because it's not, it's more like weird and straight up horror toward the end. But if that sounds like something that you would like, then you should totally check this one out, because I feel like a lot of people don't talk about this one. This is another one that I feel like really needs a much bigger cult following. I know it has a small one, but I feel like it's not as large as it probably should be. So this movie is actually, I watched it on Tubi for free. I'm sure you can find it other streaming services as well. But like I said, if you don't have one and you know, and you don't want to spend any money on it just to see if you like it, it's on Tubi for free and you can totally watch it there. But if you've seen it, let me know what you think about it in the comments. And that will do it for this Flickers of Fear. And I will see you guys on the next one. Bye.